This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Oru Kayak. They design folding kayaks that can go virtually anywhere, thanks to their lightweight and folding design. Later in the episode, we talk again to Sonia Pevsner to hear more about her friend Trip in the boundary waters of Minnesota. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
Coherencia, it means to have this deep sense of inner well-being when you come into a place. But it's more than just understanding in an intellectual sense. It's understanding within yourself as well. So feeling those seasons and feeling what changes on the landscape. And to me, that is what home is wrapped up within, at least as far as a place is concerned, is those connections. That's how I feel most at home. I believe that it's something that I've always been after and that I've actually been able to find here in New Zealand, in this place that I've only known for 3.5 years.
This is Crystal Brindle. She's a resident of New Zealand and she works as a ranger there for the Department of Conservation. Crystal grew up the only child of 2 park rangers in the United States, so she had a lot of different homes as her father moved up through the Park Service. For Crystal, connecting with the land was easy, but she spent most of her young life on the search for home. The Spanish notion of querencia that Crystal describes is core to her story, that indescribable feeling that draws you to a place. Yet her story is also about growing up, following in her parents' footsteps, but ultimately gaining independence as she figures out what she wants in a career and a place. And most importantly, it's about listening to your gut when it tells you to go.
I was born in California, and I actually lived in Yosemite National Park for the first 6 years of my life. Because of my dad's career, he was in management with the parks. He wanted to move around from park to park. So next thing I knew, we were in Texas, and we moved to different national parks, and he kept growing his career. And I went to high school in the same place. I had 4 years in Southeast Texas, and then it was off to Colorado for college. And since then, I've worked in Alaska and Washington State, and my parents have decided to retire in Washington State. And so that's why they're there now, but it isn't actually, you know, my home in that sense.
That's a lot of places. I asked Crystal for a detailed breakdown of all of the parks her father worked at. They're mostly within the state of Texas.
It started with Yosemite, and then it was Amistad National Recreation Area in Texas, and then it was Big Bend National Park. And then Fort Davis National Historic Site, and then Big Thicket National Preserve in Southeast Texas. And then for me, I started my career in Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, and then I went to Katmai National Park in Alaska, and then North Cascades in Washington State.
So what kind of bond did you create with the places that you were living when you didn't get to stay too long?
I definitely felt really attached to Yosemite, and I still kind of do, because it was 6 years of my life that I lived in one place, and still to this day, that's the longest I've ever lived in one place. So I have this strange childhood memory of the place, and it is very place-based in that I remember, you know, touching the trees, I remember the towering cliffs and the water and the sunshine and the grass, and I remember all of that, and its scale is a childhood scale in that I remember it bigger than it actually is, which Yosemite is a pretty big place, but I remember it even grander. I still carry that with me. It's quite nostalgic for me. From that point, when we moved furthermore, I think as a child, I actually lost a little bit of the place association and became more focused on my friendships. I think that was the hardest part for me, is every time we'd move, I'd have to make new friends again. And I got so tired of doing that and leaving my friends behind. I still connected with the places because I was always outside playing and all that. And I remember things about it. But I became quite wrapped up in those friendships and having to start them over again. It wasn't until the end of high school, actually, that I started thinking about place again. Because where I was living was unlike anywhere else I had ever lived. It was in Southeast Texas. It was very flat and it was very urbanized. And I realized all of a sudden that this isn't like the places I had lived as a child and that my childhood had been special. And I realized, well, hang on, I don't have mountains. I don't have this amazing trail system. I'm not outside all the time. And I think I like that. I think I want that in my life. So it was a big realization time for me. And that's why I chose to go to college in Colorado. I felt like I had to get back to the mountains. That was my only truth that I felt like I knew, is I have to get back to the mountains. Now, I'd never lived in Colorado, but for some reason, it seemed similar to me to what I remembered of Yosemite. And it seemed like where I was meant to be. And so that's what influenced that decision. And since then, my life has been just focused on place and my connection to it.
And scale.
And scale. Yes, absolutely.
And so your dad was moving up through the Park Service. What was your mom's position as a ranger? Like what type of work did she do?
My mom started her career as a ranger in interpretation. She started at the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, and she loved interpretation. She did that at Carlsbad Caverns after the Liberty Bell, and then she got into administration, and it worked well for her during her pregnancy with me because she'd have a really casual schedule, and she could do admin work from home. So that was kind of what she was in when my dad's career started taking off. Now, the problem with this is that in the National Park Service, if you become the overall manager, if you're the superintendent of a national park, your partner or your spouse can't actually work underneath you. And so my mom's career was kind of halted with the National Park Service, which was a bit of a struggle for them. My mom, you know, she said, okay, I'm on board with this, but it's going to be a little bit difficult. So what she did is she had to leave the Park Service and start working for friends organizations. Thankfully, those exist, you know, Friends of Big Thicket, National Preserve, and so on and so forth. And so she'd be able to do the work that she wanted to do, but not for the National Park Service, while my dad was working those jobs.
Oh, so I guess that was probably a conversation that they had, right? Like, you're going to do this, I'm going to do this.
She said she was okay, you know, to support his career. And she was, and she did it really well for a lot of years. But I think as they got older, that was a bit of a point of tension where my mom felt like, wait a minute, I didn't get to have the career with the Park Service I was hoping to have. And so they decided to change things a little bit. When I went off to college, my mom saw that as an opportunity to start working for the Park Service again. And they actually split ways, not officially, but in location. And my mom moved to Colorado and worked for Rocky Mountain National Park. And my dad worked for Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, and he was superintendent there. But my mom could work for a different park.
I love the way they made that work for themselves. It's tough. There's probably that push and pull for her too.
Definitely. And it's kind of funny as well, because it was this kind of independence thing for her, I think. But at the same time, she didn't totally want to let me go, I think, as well, because I am an only child. And so she thought, oh, great, like I can go and be in Colorado with Crystal, but also be doing my own kind of career thing again. So for 4 years while I was going to college, I spent a lot of time with my mom, only got to see my dad every couple of months in Arizona. But now they're living together again. And I think it's good that they had that time to, I don't know, work on their own things and still both be working for the Park Service.
What did you study when you went to Colorado? Did you have any idea what you wanted to study? I know it's really hard when you're 18, but.
No, I did, or at least I thought I did. I was all in. I was super committed. Again, when I was in high school, I kind of looked back on my life and I saw that I had this park ranger upbringing and I had this experience. And I just thought, well, I think I want to do the same thing. Here I am wanting to spend time outside, living in these places. And I think I could maybe do that best. And I want to do what I can do best, you know, sort of for this world. And so I decided that I was going to be a park ranger too. So I decided to study natural resources, recreation, and tourism is the name of my major at Colorado State University. And they have a whole college dedicated to natural resources studies. So that was partly why I chose them as well. I just went all in for it and studied, you know, social aspects of natural resources and management and how to work in a park. And they even joke at that school that my degree is called the Park Ranger Factory. People typically go in, they have this degree, and then they get out and they work for the Forest Service or the Park Service or something of the like.
You said to me before that your parents kind of assumed you would work in the Park Service.
Yeah, you know, I think they did because they believed in it so much. You know, I think for them, it was the best. They just thought, this is a really great path to take. This is a great lifestyle. And so they wanted that for me, I think. And again, because of the place we were living, I think it was real obvious to us that was kind of what we were seeking and that where we were at the moment in high school wasn't quite right. And so we all kind of thought, oh, wow, you know, this is really where it's at, is working and living in national parks. So they did have that expectation for me. And I shared that sentiment at the time. And so they were just ecstatic.
Do you think looking back on it, that it was what you were wanting to do 100%? Or was there a piece of it that you wanted to like please your parents?
I think it was both, for sure. I have had a strong desire to please my parents. You know, as a child, I just always wanted to be, I wanted to be doing the right thing, you know, by them for the most part, of course. And I wanted them to be proud of me and all that. And so I think that that did factor into that decision. It felt like the right thing to do for me based on what I could see in my life at that point. But I don't think I could see the full picture. And so a lot of it was like, oh, well, if my parents really support this decision and I like what my parents have done, then yeah, that's a further reason to sort of go down this path. So it definitely was a factor in that decision.
When Crystal was in college, she got her first seasonal position at Rocky Mountain National Park.
So what I did is I was working in the backcountry office of Rocky Mountain National Park, and it's this wonderful little log cabin that is essentially a visitor center, but just for the backcountry. So every single day I got to tell people about the backcountry resources of Rocky Mountain National Park and issue camping permits. And what I loved about that job was the constant contact with people. I got to just talk to them on the phone, in person, and our focus was something that I truly loved. And each season I got more and more into it. And basically I would spend every single weekend out in the park's backcountry. And I, you know, went from trail to off trail to really difficult, complex stuff by my last season. And every week I'd come back in on Monday morning and I would just share what I learned with people. And it was so much fun.
Crystal loved working at the park, so she did so for all four summers as an undergrad. By the last summer, though, she was ready to pursue a newfound love for a faraway place.
It felt like it was time to sort of move on from it. It was probably the best summer. I finally felt like I knew what I needed to know. I felt very confident in the role. I felt like I knew that backcountry, you know, inside and out, and I had a great summer. But if we back up just a couple months before then, in December and January of that year prior to that summer, I visited New Zealand for the first time. And with that visit came this recognition of something I'd never experienced before, and a recognition of a different path that I'd never considered before. And that kind of consumed me during my summer position at Rocky Mountain, because my whole goal that summer was moving to New Zealand and working down there.
What did you fall in love with?
Man. When I went to New Zealand, it was just a simple vacation with my parents, just my mom, my dad, and me. And it was 2.5 weeks. When we got to New Zealand, we actually had this terrible time getting there with the flights. It was absolutely awful. And I won't tell you the whole story, but it was just painful. And it was delayed and all that. And we finally got to New Zealand and we got to the South Island. And we were driving from Christchurch to Aoraki Mount Cook National Park. And we got there that night and we went for a little walk. And it was the first night there. And I was struck again by this theme of scale. I could not believe how big the mountains were and how straight they rose from the low valleys. And I was just blown away by that, just on that first night. Throughout the 2 weeks, it evolved into just being struck by the landscapes and also the culture and the people and the easy way of life. It all just seemed as close to perfect as I could imagine. And I never realized that something like that existed in the world. Whether it was the blue turquoise water, the huge lakes, the snow-capped towering peaks, the golden tussock, the green forest, whatever it was, it all came together to enchant me more than anything that I had seen to this point. And yet, I had seen incredible landscapes my whole life, right? But this was just something different for me.
It was love.
It was love. It was love at first sight. It really was. And I was enamored. I mean, the whole trip, I was telling my parents, I was like, I love this place. I'm going to live here. I am. And they were just like, no, you're not. What are you talking about? You're always so passionate. You know, yeah, right. You're not going to do it. And I was like, no, really, I'm going to live here. And yeah, that's what I did.
Crystal did come to live in New Zealand. She even became a resident, but it didn't happen overnight. We'll find out how after a word from our sponsor, Oru Kayak. The folks at Oru Kayak believe that connecting to nature is a deep human need, even for those of us who live in cities. We talked again to Sonia about borrowing her friend's Oru Kayak and taking it to the boundary waters of Minnesota.
The Oru was like perfect, as it turns out, because the portages were probably like 100 meters roughly, and we had to do 4 of them. And the Oru was super light. On the way out, we actually had it folded into the backpack, so we just put it on our backs and carried it. And then coming back, we already had unfolded it, so you just pick it up and you carry it because it weighs nothing. And then we were able to carry all of our other bags with us as well. It was perfect. I mean, it was like so durable and so light, and I was able to take it in put it in the water and take it out by myself. You know, compared to the canoe, which weighs like 60 pounds, it was just like a dream. It would have been really easy to just carry the Oru over the portages, especially because a lot of the portages go around waterfalls. So it's uneven terrain and it goes up and down. So the less weight you carry, the better. Three Orus would still have weighed less than one canoe.
Get light on the water in a beautiful, foldable Oru kayak. Learn more at www.orukayak.com. That's www.orukayak.com.
So what steps did you take in both making that decision and actually making it happen? Because it's not easy to just change countries.
It's really not. And it was such a big decision. And a lot of people told me I was crazy. You know, they said, what are you doing? You need to really think about this. And it's probably not the right thing and all that. I did all of it during that summer at Rocky Mountain National Park, my last summer. So while I was working in that role, I spent time trying to get a job in New Zealand. Now, what I want to mention first is that I actually had a bit of a serendipitous event to spur on my first move to New Zealand. And that was that I actually won a trip to New Zealand.
Crystal entered this contest on Facebook, of all places. It was the kind of contest that you see all the time and you think about entering, or you maybe actually enter, but you still think there is no way I could win that. But out of 10,000 people who entered, Crystal did.
It was a 10-day tour around the North Island as well, which was cool. But for me, I thought, oh, wow, here I get round-trip airfare to New Zealand. What can I do with that? I think I'm going to move there. And so I decided to move there for 6 months and use that round trip ticket to get me there and then get me back again. So it was kind of like a easing myself into this moving to New Zealand thing. I still believed in my heart that this was the place for me permanently, but I thought I'm going to take it in a baby step. And I'm going to do it for 6 months.
And what did you do when you were there for 6 months?
Yeah. So when I got this ticket, this, you know, serendipitous, here you go, you can go to New Zealand. What I did with that is I thought, well, I need to make my time there meaningful. And above all, I wanted to work for the Department of Conservation because that entity here in New Zealand is most similar to the National Park Service in the States. And that's where my experience lies. And it's the work that I do want to be doing. I want to be working for parks. So I thought I have to work for the Department of Conservation. But of course, I was a young girl from the States with a working holiday visa, which anybody basically can get in 48 hours, a very simple visa. So I had to make myself competitive to the government of New Zealand and get hired. And everybody told me I couldn't do it. They said, they don't hire foreigners. You're not going to get in. So I said, I am. And I spent the whole summer working to get that offer, basically. I shifted my U.S. resume into a New Zealand-style CV. I did all the work I could. I made all the contacts. I researched everything. I did courses online, everything I could do. And I managed to get a phone interview with the Department of Conservation here in Golden Bay for an Able Tasman hut warden position. And they actually, the first night for the interview, they couldn't figure out how to call me at all. And so our scheduled interview, here I am ready, and then the call doesn't even happen. And they rescheduled for the next day. And it was actually a blessing in disguise because I got all of my nerves out. And then the next day, I was pretty calm and ready for this interview. But it was an hour and a half, this panel interview. They asked me all sorts of questions. The accent was quite difficult to manage over the phone. I'd have to ask them to repeat things. And I felt pretty confident at the end of the interview, but I was still like, oh, wow, I don't know if they're going to, why would they give me this job? You know, I'm still this unknown quantity. They'd never even seen my face. And sure enough, they offered me the job. They were really impressed with my interview, and I just felt so grateful. And I thought that this is it. This is the opportunity, this big break I was looking for. And so what I did for that 6 months, I worked for the Department of Conservation as a hut warden on the Able Tasman Coastal Track here in Golden Bay.
What are the duties of a hut warden?
What it is in New Zealand, there's this extensive hut network in the backcountry. There's also this network that exists on Great Walks, which are these 9 walks across the country that are marketed as like the greatest walking in New Zealand, but also to an easier standard. So they're wide, big trails, that sort of thing. And they've got huts all along the way. So it's really quite luxurious as far as, you know, a backcountry backpacking experience would be. So the Able Tasman Coastal Track is one of the country's great walks, and it has a lot of huts along the track. And as a hut warden, you actually live in residence at one of these huts, and you maintain it, and you check bookings, you make sure that people are supposed to stay there, and you give them interpretation, you educate them about the natural resources, and you do a bit of trail maintenance, and you just do whatever needs to be done out there. after the 6 months, I really didn't feel like leaving New Zealand, to be honest. That 6 months was incredible. While I was working here, every weekend, I would just get out and go into the backcountry. I would sometimes drive 12 hours to get down to the southern part of the South Island, and I would go on these huge missions and into the mountains. And so it was an incredible summer. But I knew that my time was coming up. I had to go back to the States because my working holiday visa was only a year long anyway. I'd only planned to be here for 6 months. So yeah, that's what I did. I thought, okay, I'm going to go back to the States. I'm going to work for the Park Service again, but I want to work somewhere different and I want to do something exciting. One day I saw a job application for working in Katmai National Park and Preserve, which I had never heard of, to be honest, on the Alaska Peninsula. And it just captivated me. It seemed really exciting. So I applied and I actually had an interview by phone over a Wi-Fi connection in my car on the side of the road with papers scattered everywhere. And yeah, I was offered a job as an interpretive park ranger in Katmai, working at a place called Brooks Camp. It's basically a place where there are brown bears everywhere. And our job as rangers is to manage visitors around brown bears.
So how did you feel about the landscape in that area of Alaska?
It was incredible, absolutely, and definitely on a larger scale than anything I'd experienced before. Mostly wilderness, actually, was what really struck me, is how wild it truly was. Just flying out there really gives you a sense of that. I flew from Seattle to Anchorage, and then Anchorage to this little town of King Salmon. And the flight from Anchorage to King Salmon is gorgeous. It's just down the Alaska Peninsula, and there's just pools of water everywhere, and lakes and volcanoes and glaciers, and just this huge plains of tundra. It really puts it into perspective. So by the time you land, you already feel like you're in the middle of nowhere, and you really are. The Alaska Peninsula is not even connected to the rest of Alaska by roads. So the roads that do exist on the peninsula are, say, 15 miles long. They don't actually go anywhere. So they start nowhere and they end nowhere. And that's where I ended up. And we were even further removed than the little town of King Salmon, because once we landed, we had to board a float plane and fly for half an hour out to Brooks Camp, which is actually in the park proper. And it's just on a lake and there's no other way to get there except for a float plane. So it was wild. It still ranks with probably one of the most memorable experiences I've had. It really stuck with me. So I'm really grateful for that experience.
Did you just spend the summer there? Where did you go from there?
Right. So all these positions are just seasonal. So when I took that position, it was just 5 months. It was something like, you know, May 3rd through to the end of September there in Katmai. So when we get these positions, we know they have an end date and you know that you have to be doing something else afterwards. So basically the way that works is that when you start the position, you can focus on that position and being there. And then about midway through, you have to start thinking about what's next, which is a bit of a shame, but it's just the kind of seasonal grind, you know, you get used to it. About halfway through, I was really asking myself some big questions about New Zealand, basically. Okay, if I still feel like I need to get back to New Zealand, how am I going to do it? And am I going to do it? And is it the right thing? And I was just thinking about it basically all the time.
How did you figure out that yes?
The thing that's it's never changed ever since I came to New Zealand is I've had this feeling inside of me that it's the place where I need to be. And that feeling exists no matter what. So even when I go and have an incredible experience like working in Alaska or anything that might happen, it's still there, sort of buried inside of me. Sometimes I, in the past, had tried to bury it, you know, get it, kind of bury it down. Oh, no, you should be in the States. You should be working for the Park Service. But it would just resurface again and again and again. That's what I was grappling with. I was trying to analyze that feeling and decide what it meant for my future. I guess the way I would try to explain it is when I left New Zealand after that first season of working here, I knew I wanted to come back. So I knew before I left. That never left me. So while I was in Alaska, I still had that same feeling. And it was just decision about whether to accept that feeling or whether to ignore it. And I decided that I wanted to accept it after spending a lot of time internally, just thinking it through and deciding to listen to my heart, really. I just thought, well, if I feel this way, then I must feel this way for a reason, even though I can't see all the way down the line and know what it is exactly that I'm supposed to be doing in New Zealand. But I have this gut feeling, so I'm going to follow it. It really was as simple as that.
That makes sense. What did your parents think when you decided that?
You know, because I was easing myself into the being in New Zealand thing with the 6 months and then coming back, every time I came back, they had hopes that I would stay in the States and continue my career with the Park Service. They were always very happy when I did come back because they thought, oh, great, you know, here you go, working on another seasonal position. And maybe this time you'll stay instead of going back to New Zealand. And they were happy for the time being because I was still working towards my career with the Park Service, even though I was kind of disappearing for the winters. So that's how they saw it. They saw it as I was kind of having a good time in New Zealand, doing something fun and different, but that I was still working towards my career in the States. And I didn't feel that way. I felt like I was putting in time and effort building something here in New Zealand. And while I was in the States, it was just a placeholder. I didn't want to feel that way. I wanted to feel all in and not split between two. I sort of felt like for a while I was actually having two careers, these two paths that were going off. And I wasn't being the best that I could be because I was divided into two. So I was doing, you know, an all right job here in the States and an all right job in New Zealand. And I thought, oh, gosh, if I could just bring my attention to one thing, then I would be doing it as good as I really could do it. And so that was the struggle for me, was really focusing that and making the decision to be in one place versus the other.
Yeah, that would be a struggle because it's hard to feel satisfied, right? And you don't seem like someone who is comfortable with half doing something.
No, I'm not. I'm really not. And that's what got to me. Because a lot of people told me, oh, just have fun. This is so great. You're living summer to summer. Isn't it wonderful? You know, the seasonal lifestyle is the lifestyle to have. And I thought, oh, yeah, it really is fun. But I guess I just have always wanted more than fun. I've always wanted meaning in my work and in my life. And so to me, as great as those experiences were, I felt that it wasn't leading where I wanted it to lead. And I was rushing it a bit too much. You know, I felt like, oh, I just want to be complete in something. And I want to be settled in the sense that I know at least the direction in which I'm going, which of course, now I look back and go, oh, I'm glad I had those experiences. It built me to the person that I am today. But at the time, I felt like I just really wanted more clarity in that future direction. And I wanted to be focusing a little bit more on one thing.
You really can't tell what's going to happen.
No, you really can't. And you have to just go by what you do know, right? And what you do feel at the moment. And so that's what I decided. I boiled it down to that and just made my decisions based on that.
So Crystal made the decision that she wanted to go back to New Zealand. And while she simplified the decision of where, the what she was going to do was not quite as easy. She had to find work and get a work visa.
Finding work in another country, but especially in New Zealand, it is easier basically the younger that you are, because they do have age restrictions for some of their working visas. So thankfully, I got started on this path when I was young, so that never was an issue for me. 30 is the cutoff for some of those visas, and otherwise you can really do anything that you'd like. So that was never an issue for me, but I did feel a little bit in the back of my mind, like, okay, well, I've got to keep doing this while I can, because in, you know, 5 or 6 years or something, I won't be able to have those visa opportunities. So what I found most difficult was after my first season of having the working holiday visa come through, that was it. It's a one-time thing. So I did it for my first season, but then I couldn't get it again. So I had no idea what visa I could get that would allow me to come back to New Zealand for my second season. So when I was in Alaska and I decided New Zealand was where I needed to be for my next season, I had to spend the rest of that summer in Alaska figuring out how to actually make it happen. And what I ended up getting was something called an essential skills working visa, which I had no idea existed until I contacted my supervisor down here in New Zealand. And I indicated to him, you know, my supreme interest in coming back and how much I really wanted to work with the team again and be here in New Zealand. And I asked his advice. I said, do you know what I can do? Do you know of any visa on which I can use to come back to New Zealand? And I remember distinctly, he took a week to get back to me. And I was so nervous. I thought, oh no, I've burned my bridges. He doesn't want to hire me again. You know, I can't believe I even asked if he'd have me back. And he finally got back to me a week later, and he said, hey, Crystal, sorry for the delay. I was just chasing up a few loose ends for you, and I was finding out about these visas. And I talked to so-and-so, and they said that they've been coming back on this visa called the Essential Skills Working Visa, and they've been working for the Park Service in the United States, and they've been working for us here in New Zealand. And I think this is something that you can do, and here's contact information. So it was fantastic. I was so happy to have that support from my supervisor, and then really happy to be connected with somebody who could point me in the right direction for this visa search. And that's what I threw myself into for the rest of that summer, and was able to get that essential skills working visa. Basically, I had to have a job offer from the crew here in Golden Bay. So they were willing to do that without advertising the position. They just gave me the job offer. And then I used that as part of my visa application.
After another season working in New Zealand, Crystal went to Washington State to work in the Cascades. She decided the seasonal life wasn't enough for this place she loved so much and did the work to become a resident of New Zealand.
I am a resident, which is the most exciting thing. The visa history for me has been working holiday visa my first season, essential skills working visa for my second season, and then residency for my third. I became a resident last September. It was my mission of last summer, as I did all the paperwork and I did everything to become a resident. And that was a difficult thing as well. I had to do basically all the paperwork to show my entire life history. I mean, that's what becoming a resident is. It's like asking you for everything from your birth certificate to every reference from every job you've ever had. And I had to dredge all of that up and write about why I wanted residency and just everything. And honestly, I kind of enjoyed it. I just saw it as this way to kind of prove that I wanted to be here. And I thought, I can do that. I know why I want to be in New Zealand. And I have the time and energy to put into this. Again, with a job offer from the Department of Conservation here in Golden Bay, I was able to make that happen and become a resident. When I tell people about that here in New Zealand, they can't believe that I became a resident on a park ranger job. Normally it's engineering or, you know, something like that, a real hard technical skill. But in fact, you can become a resident being a park ranger.
It helps if you're park ranger royalty in the United States.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because that's the funny thing, actually, is that, you know, I in doing this, moving to a new country and be a park ranger, I detached from my parents and their connections, you know, with the National Park Service. And that kind of felt good, to be honest, because I felt like I've built my own career here separate from my parents. But you're right in that is sometimes part of it is, of course, it is about who you know within these agencies. And when I was in the Park Service in the States, people did know my parents, but here they don't.
So in New Zealand, Crystal found place and scale and independence. I asked her about her current job. Her work also connects her to the landscape.
My day-to-day is pretty interesting, actually, with my work. So at the moment, I am working as a biodiversity ranger for the Department of Conservation in Golden Bay. And this is the first time I've done anything with the department other than being a hut warden. So I finished my third season as a hut warden in April, and I was on the Heafy track. And then I rolled right into this position as a biodiversity ranger. So what we're doing at the moment as rangers is we go into the mountains for 9 days at a time. So we're out there for 9 whole days, and then we come back and we're off for 5 days. So basically, my life kind of disappears in these fortnightly chunks, and all of a sudden, one's gone and the next is starting. And when we're out there for work, we are based at Perry Saddle Hut, which is one of the huts on the Heafy Track, which is the Great Walk. And we actually spend all of our time off track, off trail. And we go into the forest and we navigate following a GPS and a compass. And what we're trying to do is actually build trap lines. The Gulen Downs has been chosen as a place to protect native species because there are so many incredible species that live there, and also possibly reintroduce other rare native species into this location. Now, because of that, we have to make sure that the area is protected from predators, because in New Zealand, the biggest conservation concern is actually predators, which is, I know, so counterintuitive than what you hear in the United States. But little predators like weasels and stoats and rats prey on the native birds. So our job is to build trap lines where traps will be placed to hopefully get rid of these predators and therefore protect the native wildlife. So that's what we're doing every day. We're walking around in the forest, we are navigating, and we're actually cutting open some tracks so that we can walk through the forest and maintain trap lines.
How has it been balancing that feeling between New Zealand and, you know, family and friends, home and not home? I'm going to keep using that word incorrectly, back in the U.S.
I go back and forth on it at times, but always with the constant feeling that as far as place is concerned, this is the place for me. So I have a lot of peace and faith about that. But yeah, of course, I miss my parents and I miss my really good friends that I developed in high school and college. I miss them to death because they're still my best friends today and they still live in the States. So I definitely go back and forth with those feelings. What I've found to help with that is just spending time working on those relationships. I actually feel that the distance has forced me to become a more active friend and a more active daughter. And that's how I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it as an opportunity to just be a better friend and be a better daughter. And it's been great, actually. I plan visits. I visit them in the States whenever I can. And then thankfully, this last summer, they all came out here and visited me. And it was wonderful. I felt that I was at my happiest when I could be in this place that I love and then sharing it with people that I love. That was amazing. So basically, I just decided I want more of this. You know, if I'm going to make this decision to live so far away from people that I do really love, then I'm going to work for these relationships and try to see them in person, face to face, as often as I can.
I just have one more question for you. I'm guessing you're probably around 25, right?
I am. You're right. Yeah.
I know you're going off of feeling now and like it's impossible to know the future, but could you see yourself spending a lifetime in New Zealand?
Yes, I could. I really could. I think actually over the last month or so, I've had a lot more clarity in my future here in New Zealand, and maybe more than clarity, just kind of confidence in it. I feel excited and empowered, kind of like I did the first time I moved to New Zealand, but with more direction. And I'm really excited about that. So absolutely, I can see myself spending a lifetime in New Zealand. And I'm starting to see the path that might take. And the reason I'm feeling this way is because it's coming up to the time in which I think I'm going to try to move to another location within New Zealand. And so that means that I'm kind of on the job hunt again. And doing that helps me see all of these really exciting options that I would just love to do. And so that's helping me kind of see the way in which I could maybe have a career with the Department of Conservation for, you know, most of my life. I think what it comes down to most is that I feel that I've really become empowered in creating home for myself where I want it to be. And I guess I feel that that isn't talked about a lot. I guess I feel like people, I don't know, they home is where it has to be, and they think where they're from is their home, which it's wonderful if you do feel that way. But if you don't feel that way, which was me, growing up, I felt like, where in the world is my home? See it as an opportunity to carve it out for yourself. Because it's easy to feel kind of sorry for yourself and that you don't have a home and you don't have this stability that a lot of other people have. But in fact, you do. You have stability in change, your ability to adapt and use that to propel you forward. And the world is your oyster. So I guess that's what I feel. I've been able to shift my way of thinking about home. And I've been able to harness that for something really exciting. And I've been able to find home in a new place, but a place that feels totally right for me, a place where I feel this concept of coherencia. And yet I've only known it for 3.5 years. And so I guess I'm excited by that possibility of spending a lifetime in this place, getting to know it, and maybe seeking connection more than I would if, say, I were born and raised here. You know, everything it still feels kind of new to me. It still has this magic. And every leaf, every sparkle of frost that I'm experiencing this winter is just incredible for me. And I'm grateful that I have that perspective. And I think it comes from my eternal search for home.
Crystal is a landscape photographer as well as a ranger. In her photographs, you can see her deep connection and appreciation for this place she now calls home. Find her photographs at www.inpursuitofthewild.com or through the link on our landing page at www.she-explores.com/podcast. I think this feeling of home changes as we move through life. I'm happy that Crystal has carved out this one for her 25-year-old self, and I appreciate the time she took to share it so articulately with me. If you enjoy this show, please take a minute to rate it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Also, make sure to join our Facebook group to connect with other listeners. And while I'm at it, the second episode of our new podcast, Women on the Road, is out. hear from Noelle Russell about how she lives an integrated life, splitting time between weekends on the road in her Sprinter van and weeks working in a homeless shelter in Oakland, California. Thanks to our sponsor, Oru Kayak. Music is by Josh Woodward, Lee Rosevere, and Chris Zabriskie. Until next week, bye.